is up, everybody? Welcome to this week's episode of the Dense Pixels Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brad, joined by my co-host, Micah.
Hello.
I'm going to start off with some bummer news, but, you know, there's a video game tie into this, so it's fair. But, you know, this past week, I think it was on Friday, noted actor, Baltimore-born, and video game voice actor extraordinaire, Lance Reddick, passed away at the age of 60. And I just think that sucks.
Yeah, man, 60 is no age to be dying. It really isn't. If anything, it's the beginning of your final act. Mm-hmm. And look, everyone knows Lance Reddick. Even if you're not like into movies and stuff, you've seen him before.
I would say he's probably in this current day and age, I would say he's our most preeminent that guy in media.
In film. Yeah. Yeah. That bald black guy.
Yeah.
With the deep voice. Yeah. I would agree with that. He was a great actor, a tremendous character actor. He was also a singer. Mm-hmm. He's got an album out. I forget the name of it, but if you like jazz soul music, go seek it out. It's pretty good. It's a video game podcast. He's been in a couple of video games. His likeness and voice was in the Horizon games. Mm-hmm. And, I think the most mainstream of gamers will probably recognize him as the voice of Zavala, the Titan commander in Destiny. And, he actually played these games. Like he really enjoyed them.
He was really like beloved and loved the Destiny community. His wife, I think, shared a video of how he was like literally playing Destiny like the day before he passed, because his passing was unexpected. He was a gamer. He played shit. And again, like he was really into the whole Destiny community vibe. He was very gracious. Would constantly geek out on Twitter when cool shit was happening in Destiny. He very much was not there for, you know, the paycheck. It was very clear, and it was kind of cool. His wife put out a statement on Sunday, saying, "Hey, like we hear you, we've received all your love and support, and if you want to make donations in his name, here's where you should donate." And she made in this 3-paragraph statement, she specifically mentioned the players in Destiny that had been paying tribute to Zavala in game all weekend, and those tributes like went viral and went online, and like you would see people that would game journalists, they'd like go to the tower and see like there's just like a throng of Guardians just like around Zavala, like on one knee kind of thing, like in the tower. And that's like this is the kind of stuff that like is impromptu very cool about video games and is one of the fun things about communities like this. And the Destiny community, for all the scorn that they can sometimes give Bungie, and how they could be a little overreactionary, it's one of the more tight-knit gaming communities that I can recall. Like it was really enjoyable to be a part of that group, and one of the more welcoming communities that are out there in gaming. So to see them kind of band together like that was pretty cool. And it was a silver lining to an otherwise kind of shitty ordeal. So,
safe home to Lance Reddick, and man, he'll be missed. Man, it's gonna be weird watching like John Wick and a couple other roles that he will posthumously be in. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Destiny community having like a vigil. This is not the first time I've seen something like this, particularly in like an MMO. Like, mm-hmm. usually when someone passes away in real life, like their clan or whatever will hold a like some sort of memorial service in game. And I think that's dope, man. Is this a hot take? Gaming fandom is as toxic as fandom is, the gaming fandom as a whole is the least toxic.
I don't think you can paint gaming fandom with that broad of a brush, because there's sub communities within the greater like gaming community. And then there's sub communities within the sub community. So like, if you like look at the game fandom in general, sure. And, but then if you like, let's move to the FGC. And the FGC, like, it kind of depends on the game, doesn't it? Like how good or bad the community is. It kind of varies from game to game. Same in like the online shooter discourse. Like, you know, the Call of Duty community is known for, like that's where the meme came from, of the fucking 12-year-old screaming the N-word at you. You know, yeah. With like pre-pubescent boys. You know, you talk about like, oh, like you're so gay, like that kind of bullshit. Like that originated in the fucking Call of Duty community and was like popularized there. So like, I don't know that you can say that the gaming community and plus like the fucking gaming community in some ways gave us Gamergate. You know what I mean? which has led to much more terrible societal impacts.
Yeah, you're right.
Wide reaching. Right. So yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if we can give those flowers to the game community.
We're but all garbage.
There are certain games that do have pretty decent communities. I think Destiny's one.
I think the Destiny community is actually really, really like helpful.
Yeah, I think them and from what I understand, the Final Fantasy 14 community is probably like the top two in terms of just like general welcoming and like the least toxic behavior online. And that's not to say there is no toxic behavior. I'm sure, you know, anecdotally people can share examples of that, but I'm saying it just generally, you know, welcoming. They're excited for people to play. There's not nearly as much gatekeeping. And I think part of the reason for that is because those games are very popular, but they're not like WoW level or Call of Duty level popular, where that, you feel like that, you know, people are intruding, you know, like it's like when you discover a band, when they're kind of like an indie band and like you kind of, you're on the secret, and then they hit it big. And then all of a sudden these people are invading your fandom that you've cultivated, and it's different now than it was before. And you feel like you're losing something personal. I don't think those communities yet are so big that kind of personal feeling is gone in the way it is in like the WoW community or like Call of Duty and stuff like that, or Fortnite.
Yeah, man, I don't know what I was thinking trying to find the best in people. Yeah, I can't. I don't look for the best in people. They will disappoint you.
Lance Reddick, you will be missed. That was certainly like I said, I don't typically get fazed very often by celebrity deaths. But this one definitely, threw me for a bit of a loop and shocked me when I read about it at work. So that does stink. Speaking of growing communities, the Diablo 4 beta, the first Diablo 4 beta was this weekend. It was only open to people that pre-ordered the game, which means that Micah played in it and I did not, because I'm still very much anti-pre-order right now.
Well, you could have played in it if you ordered, I don't know how many KFC fucking
double down.
chicken sandwiches with a fried chicken as the bread.
So let me ask you this question. I know it's been popular. It's been popular discourse lately to talk about like the McRib is like a mid sandwich. Like everyone's like the McRib is mid, even though some people get very excited about the McRib when it does come around. How is it that the McRib is not a permanent staple on the McDonald's menu, yet the KFC Double Down has been around for what, 15 years? I think at this point, if not more. And somehow it's still out there thriving.
The double down has its own Wikipedia entry. That's how Jamis the Double Down is.
It's because it's the most audacious sandwich that a fast food restaurant has ever come out with. And it's the only way that such a sandwich could work, because you can't have like two fucking beef patties acting as the bun of a sandwich, right? Like, that'd be greasy as fuck. Like, that'd be even greasier than the Double Down is.
Right.
Not that I would know from personal experience.
I can't imagine like being at a point in my life where I have to eat a chicken sandwich where the bread is the chicken and the sandwich is like bacon or whatever. Like, if I ever get to that point, like,
that's like we're probably straying from the beaten path here, because I want you to talk about Diablo 4. Yes. So I know the discourse in the world around like what constitutes a sandwich, right? Like that's always, you know, that, like, you know, is a hot dog a sandwich, you know, that sort of thing. Is the Double Down, the KFC Double Down, can that be defined as a sandwich? Or is it just two pieces of chicken with a couple strips of bacon and sauce in between them and cheese?
I think it's just handheld meat. Like, at this point, one of them giant turkey legs that you get at a Ren Fest, that's a sandwich, right? If the Double Down is a sandwich. I don't know. Also, a hot dog is not a sandwich. It's a hot dog. If it was a sandwich, we'd call it a sandwich and not a hot dog. That's the logic I'm going with. Don't fight me, because I don't care. Diablo 4, the beta. So let me preface this by saying I'm not like a huge Diablo person, right? I didn't play 1, I didn't play 2 or the remake of 2. My first Diablo was Diablo 3. I bought it on PC when it first came out because, like, you know, I'm a whore for the zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. And I played it and I liked it. I don't like it enough to like replay it over and over and over and over and over and over again. But I do like it. I find it, I play games to relax at this point. And that's the perfect like podcast game. I could just listen to something and just kind of grind it out. So Diablo 4. One of the things that sucks about Diablo 4 is that you can't just play it. You need a persistent online connection, to even log in. Mm-hmm. Logging in, the first time I logged in, no problem, because I logged in right at noon. Mm-hmm. Second time I logged in, I had to wait an hour and a half. And by the end of the beta, it wasn't that bad. Like, they had some serious like issues, mm-hmm. but by the end of the beta, you could get in. So it wasn't that big of a deal, which I imagine will happen come June when the game comes out. You wouldn't have to worry about that if you didn't have to have an online connection, to play this game. And not just an online connection, like, it's like an MMO, mm-hmm. where you are queued in and you enter an instance and there's other people just running around. And I don't know if you can turn that off. Like, I don't know if you can.
I don't think you can. I think it's one of the selling points of the game is that it's like a shared world experience, because one of the things that they added to the game was like world bosses that are like world events that, you know, a couple, like tens of people are intended to take down together. So
I do like that, mm-hmm. but I don't, it feels like forced friendship is needed. And I don't like that, in my gaming.
So to kind of give some perspective, like Diablo Immortal is the same way, where it requires you to be connected online and you're in a shared instance, with other players. And I didn't find the other players added to or detracted from the experience. And in fact, some of the shared experiences you could do with other players were actually kind of cool. So I'm actually quite looking forward to this. the cool thing is that, like, when other players are in your instance, like, you still have your own loot. Like, when loot drops from an enemy, it's not like it's a free for all to grab it. Like, you see your loot, yeah. They see their loot, and, you know, that, and that's all each other sees. So, like, you don't have to worry about someone stealing from you unless they're actually physically, like, in the party with you at that
point. The only reason I mentioned forced friendship is I don't want to have to join a clan in order to take on a world boss. There have been world events that I haven't like gotten to the world boss in the beta. That's at the end, and I don't have that kind of time. But I have played some world events, and I have seen people running around, and we're just like, we have that common thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a Destiny world event. And people just kind of flock to it and take it out and then go do their thing. I like that. I just hope that I'm not looking forward to the other part of Destiny where it's like, here's a raid and you need to have six of your friends, not even six randos, six people you actually know need to go in. I don't like that. But, you know, I guess I'm just antisocial. Look, man, the game it's fun. It's Diablo. They had three classes. Barbarian, Sorceress, and a Rogue. I tried all of them, but I gravitated to the Rogue because in these types of games, I like to kill people from afar, right? Like, I'm a bow and arrow guy. I'm a ranged guy. I tried the Barbarian, and I usually don't like tank characters. A lot of people like to do, like, big hits. I like to do a lot of hits, right? I'm one of those, like, death by a thousand cuts guys. And the Barbarian, some of the skills had, some of the basics had moves where that were, like, fast-hitting, like, multi-hit. So I was like, all right, if I do a Barbarian, that's probably how I'll go. And then I tried Sorcerer. I didn't give it enough time. And I'm not like, I gotta do 5-digit damage. I don't need to do that. Right. So I played most of my time as a rogue. The rogue is what you think it is. A lot of mobility options, a lot of, traps. It's fun. I enjoy it. The story seems super interesting. There's one particular cutscene that just kind of stuck with me, where there is it's a flashback and you are in a church, and, you know, the preacher is chastising these people. They're like, hey, like, what the fuck, yo? Like, you got to get away from sin, right? And then here comes Lilith, the game's boss, and she is just convincing these people, hey, you can follow me. I'm not going to make fun of you. All you got to do is just kind of take him out. And that's what they, like, it's so dark and, like, it's creepy. This is a story that I'll pay attention to, is what I'm saying. Like, I really didn't pay attention to Diablo 3's story, but this story has me hooked.
It's funny because, so, like, I'm more into, like, the Diablo lore than probably most people are. And they've actually, like, from a world-building standpoint, like, the Diablo world, you know, like, Sanctuary is pretty, they've done a cool job. They've made some, you know, interesting characters with, you know, interesting motivations and kind of like the whole arc of the eternal struggle between heaven and hell, with humanity kind of caught in between, has been an interesting story that they've told really poorly in within the three games that they've put out so far. Even Diablo 3, which had the most story in it, you know, had a couple cutscenes before and after each act. But then everything else was just kind of like shitty dialogue with a lot, you know, not as much, it just wasn't as involving. And also the villains in Diablo 3 were very like mustache, you know, mustache twirling like caricatures in a lot of ways, which wasn't very cool either. So you're not the first person that I've heard echo the sentiment that the storytelling in 4 so far is the most, you know, the most compelling that they've seen in a Diablo game, which is not high bar to clear, mind you, but that's right. Kind of cool. It's kind of cool for like your first tour through the game. Now, obviously, like once you've beaten the game, you couldn't care fucking less about what's going on in the story, right. And you're just skipping cutscenes and dialogue because, you know, at that point the grind is on. So,
right.
But all in all, I think I'm going to be satisfied. It's not the best looking game. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I was expecting, but
that's interesting because Diablo fans, like longtime fans, fucking hate Diablo 3's art style. Like they think it's too colorful. Yeah, they think it's too colorful. It's too not cartoonish, but like it doesn't have that like real gothic edge to it. And that was well, that's the thing. Like you know, Blizzard said, hey, like we want to get back to that, you know, Diablo 2 art style. And Diablo 2, by contrast, and you said you've never played it. Diablo 2 is very dark. Like it's incredibly dark. especially compared to Diablo 3 and really compared to Diablo Immortal too, because I know you played a little bit of Immortal, and Immortal still has that kind of Diablo 3 sheen on it in a lot of ways. So
yeah, it feels like some of Diablo 4 is like desaturated a bit.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm comparing it to 3, which, right. You know, is like, it's almost like Torchlight, like not that bad, but like, it's look at me, right? It's eye catching. Mm-hmm. But the art style, I like this style, right? I like the, I'm digging the style, but it's not a graphical powerhouse, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're creating your character and it's like, wow, this looks really good. And then you see your character model, you know, from in your isometric view. And it's like, oh, all right. Like, I get it. But yeah, I'm digging it, man. I can't wait to get your impression. I am presuming you're going to go to, you're going to download the open beta.
Yeah. I'm going to try again the beta this weekend and see. Now it's funny because they're giving rewards for reaching certain milestones in the beta for like when you get the main game, but your progress doesn't carry over. So like, I don't know how much I want to get into it knowing that I'm going to have to do it all over again. Cause the beta has basically the entire first act of the game in it. Right.
Well, I think I tapped out at like level 12.
Okay.
Like I saw people running around at like level 25.
25 was the cap in the beta.
Okay. So. Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to get that far, but like life finds a way. I don't feel the need to, I saw what you get. Like you get a title if you make it to the first like major city, like mm-hmm. major city, which is not very difficult to do. And once I got there, I started doing like side content. Because I didn't want to progress too far in the story because like you, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have to just kind of blow through the first act. I'm going to be in it.
I might play off class then because I'm probably going to play Rogue when the game actually comes out. So I might play like Barbarian just to fuck around with it. So.
Yeah, I want to try. I want to see what Necromancer and Druid are all about. Mm-hmm. Barbarian plays exactly like you think a barbarian.
Well, I mean, it's the only class that's been in like every fucking game so far. So
right, and sorcerer. I mean, maybe you'd like sorcerer. I just, for some reason I can't. It doesn't translate.
I've always gravitated towards like my two favorite classes in 3 were Demon Hunter, which is essentially the rogue class, and Monk was also a lot of fun to play. As well, I would imagine you probably played Monk when 3 first
came out. I played Monk when Diablo 3 came out. So, yeah, I'm curious. I was a little let down that there wasn't like that like these are the only classes, mm-hmm. but that's because like I've played a little bit of Diablo 3, and it's there are more. Mm-hmm. But and you know, DLC, I get it. It's a business. But I'm curious to see, because I have no idea what a druid is.
It's an animal shapeshifter, buddy, in the Diablo universe.
Okay.
So you can like morph into different animal forms, like a bear and shit like that, that have different attacks and stuff.
All right. Well, then it sounds like I might be picking necromancer. Necromancer seems more interesting to me.
Yeah. Necromancer is definitely has always been like the most unique class to play. Just because you're not usually dealing direct damage yourself, like you're raising minions to do it for you, essentially.
Yeah. So yeah. That'll be what I try this weekend, just to kind of get a feel for it.
Yeah. So the other reason that I didn't pre-order Diablo 4 is also because not only am I just firmly against pre-orders at this point because they offer no real benefit, but I'm at a crisis of crossroads right now. I'm at like a crossroads in my life at this moment, and I fear that the Steam Deck has now turned me into one of those people. Those people that I've always mocked from the sidelines and mercilessly chided for their false sense of elitism over the rest of us mere gaming mortals. But I'm pretty sure that I'm gonna buy a gaming PC.
You're a PC guy. God damn it. God damn
it. I can't ignore all the conveniences that PC gaming has provided me in this short 6-month time period that I've been exposed to not even like the real version of PC gaming, but like this like tailor-made like baby version of PC gaming. And even that. So I'll give you an example, and I'm gonna talk about Yeez Origins later in the show. But Yeez Origins does not run natively on Steam Deck. Like, it only runs for Windows. And the Steam Deck has this Valve program built within it called Proton. And Proton basically works to take Windows games and not emulate them, but basically it's like a compatibility layer so that you can run them on Linux systems, which is what the Steam Deck is. But Yeez like didn't work with any of those either. And so I Googled, I was like, hey, can Yeez work on Steam Deck? And there's people like, yeah, it works great. You know, all I had to do, Micah, all I had to do was switch my Steam Deck into desktop mode, download the experimental version of Proton, which took me all of 2 minutes. And all of a sudden Yeez is working flawlessly on the Steam Deck, a system that does not natively support it.
Hey,
you can't buy that kind of Yeez. No pun intended. You can't provide that kind of ease of use. And I don't know, like just being able to access like the full marketplace of, you know, gaming markets that are out there, you know, between Steam, between Epic Game Store, between the free games that you get on Prime, because I'm fucking paying for Prime. I might as well enjoy all of its spoils. The fact that I could play Game Pass games on PC without any issue. The fact that very few games are optimal at this point with keyboard and mouse. Like, you can use any fucking controller that you want to on PC. Yeah, man. Like, and just kind of the flexibility and of the settings and being able to kind of run games how you want to. And it's funny because, like, so, like, back when I had Android phones, I used to be, like, a ROM flasher. Like, I used to be the guy, like, flashing custom ROMs to be able to run, like, custom versions of the operating system, which is, like, advanced Android shit that only like tinkers like to do. Mm-hmm. And yet like I never wanted to fuck around with PC. And the other thing that intimidated me about the PC market was the price of entry, right? Especially with like graphics cards being what they are right now. So that's another thing that I did some research on. I was like, hey, like, is it better to buy a pre-made gaming PC or is it better to build your own PC, like buy the components and build it yourself? And people like, nah, like the best option right now in the market with graphics cards being what they are is Secret Option 3. And that's have someone else build it for you because they have websites that have like custom builds. Like you can basically build PCs to order. They'll build it. They'll ship it to you. and you're done. And while it's more expensive than buying a pre-built PC, you have the flexibility of being able to pick the components that you want and the buying power of big companies that buy graphics cards in bulk. So you're not paying, you know, the consumer market prices right now. So like, it's actually cheaper to buy a custom build PC than it is to build your own PC because of component availability still right now. And so I looked to see kind of like what specs I wanted and what I wanted to do with it. And I got to tell you, for something that, you know, it's not cheap, obviously. Like, you know, you can, if I'm just to give you guys a heads up, like I'm looking for like a, you know, middle of the road graphics card, like 32 gigs of RAM, you know, terabyte solid storage, you know, obviously like, you know, enough cooling in it so that's not going to fucking blow up and shit like that. And I want to be able to run games at 1440p at like, you know, 120 frames a second. Like that, I'm not looking for 4K, you know, because you need a better graphics card for that. So you can estimate like how much I'm looking to pay. It's a lot of money, but kind of being able to swap out components when they become obsolete is appealing, even though those components end up being quite expensive anyway. Like, yeah. It's like always as much as consoles do, depending on what they are. But I don't know, man. Like I feel like that the veil is lifting off of me, and I'm starting to see the PC light at this point. And I feel like with just a PC and a PlayStation and whatever the Nintendo console of the day is, that I'm set. Got my Steam Deck, got my portable PC.
My brother-in-law, mm-hmm. is he's a big gamer. He prefers PC. You know, he's young, he's hip, like you right. young people. You're, you know. And he told me how much his PC is. And
mine's so like I would imagine like if like So like, is he like a super high end? Like I'm playing 4K,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like uncapped frame rate kind of bull. Yeah. I'm not spending that kind of money. Like I saw how much money that would cost. And I was like, I can't justify that. Like I can't justify that, but I can justify, you know, what I'm looking at for what I'm thinking about getting.
Well, I gotta say it was only a matter of time.
I told a friend of mine, I was like, you know, that fucking Steam Deck's like a goddamn Trojan horse. Like they wheel it in unassuming and you're like, oh, you'll never need anything more than this. Like, this is all the PC you'll ever need. And then I was like, it is all the PC I'll ever need, but is it all the PC that I'll ever want to have? I don't know that it is. Plus the other thing too, like consoles are give and take, right? Like consoles, like, they're cheaper. They're easy. You plug them in, you play, you get high. Like, I mean, the PS5, let's face it, has like, you know, essentially PC specs inside of it. Like, you know, you can run games at 4K 60. If you go down to 2K, you can, you know, you can do 120 frames per second. Like all that shit's like, you can do the same kind of stuff, but it does, like PS5, for example, doesn't support ultra wide monitors, which is unbelievable to me at this point, quite frankly. Like, I can't believe that we're at this point where like ultra wides are a thing just in the market that a lot of people have, and PlayStation's like, yeah, we don't have to worry about that. Neither does Xbox, by the way. Like, Xbox does not support ultra wide either. But PC does, and games on PC support ultra wide, support those monitors, support 21:9 aspect ratios. Micah, do you think that I'd like to play a first person shooter in 21:9? Absolutely. Yes, I would. Be fantastic. So,
look, I'm not mad at you. I happen to like, I can appreciate, you know, some aspects of fascism. You know, they look really good. They look really good. Everything else, you know, no, it was only a matter of time. It was only a matter of time because the way you talk about your Steam Deck, and honestly, that's another reason why I didn't really want a Steam Deck, mm-hmm. because I'm the same way.
Yeah, you knew you wouldn't be able to help yourself.
Yeah, man, I wouldn't be able to. And so I'm not mad at you. Quite frankly, I'm shocked.
It took,
this took so long.
Well, it's mostly because I didn't bother doing any research. Because, like, I always thought you had to choose between whatever, you know, bullshit was at Best Buy or building it yourself. And I wasn't really interested in building it myself. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew you could, I always thought, like, people say, oh, I built it myself. But I always thought, like, people actually had to, you know, build it themselves. I didn't know that there were, and like these like mainstream stores that mm-hmm. will put it together. Like I'm on Micro Center right now, just putting something together. Mm-hmm. And I'm already at a mortgage. So this is not going to be for me, but I do understand it. I do understand it. Well, look, folks, Brad's got a PC to build.
Right.
So we need you to go to densepixels.com/premium. That's right. I'm switching it up.
Get the money up front. Like I feel it's good to switch it up because the money should be the first thing that we're talking about. Save it for the
end. Go to densepixels.com/premium for $5 a month or $50 for the year. You can access a premium slate of podcasts, including The Airing of Grievances, No Time to Bleed, The Man with the Golden Tongues, Upstage Conversation, and the full, uncut, uncensored version of the Look Forward Political Podcast. Look, folks, if enough of you, if maybe, what, 60 of you, mm-hmm. if 60 of you sign up for premium, we might be able to get Brad. We might be able to get Brad.
I don't think.
A gaming PC.
I don't think that's how it works.
Look, if you don't want to do that, you should, but if you don't want to, you can still subscribe to all of our other podcasts, including Nerd Apocalypse, Black on Black Cinema, where we are going to record, an episode about a movie starring Idris Elba and Taraji B. Henson that is not, very good, called No Good Deed. And the weekly preview episode of the Look Forward Political Podcast, which, I'm a huge fan of that show. And look, if you have any suggestions on what Brad should, get, what components Brad should get, don't go around and buy like some gaudy Alienware thing. No. You know what I mean? You
know, right. Like really, like, I don't know. The part where I'm getting hung up the most is like, do I get an NVIDIA graphics card or do I get like a Ryzen graphics card?
Well, look,
what processor do I get?
If you have any, look, Brad's got questions.
I do.
And we know you have answers. So give those answers to Brad at densepixels.com/fans and come into our Discord. And there you can tell Brad, hey, this is what you should get. This is what you should get. This is what you should get. Just name the most expensive thing.
You can't slide that by me. I've done a little bit of research to know like generally where I'm sitting right now. So,
and look, go to youtube.com/densepixels and subscribe. Hit the like button and leave a comment on. We know you PC people. It's like a dog whistle, like an actual dog whistle and not like a political dog whistle, but it's like an actual dog whistle where it's like your ears perk up because you, one of us, right? You got to put him in the cult. Leave a comment on what he should do about getting his new PC, his gaming PC.
It is crazy that if you want to do like 4K, at like a high frame rate on PC, how much it costs to get a rig that'll be able to do that reliably. On one hand, like it really does make you appreciate what consoles do give us. I have to say, I have to to say. Like much more rigid. Like the customizability is not there. Not as much flexibility. But you know what? Being able to get a machine that'll play 4K games at 60 frames a second for under $500 is not bad. Or under $600. I can't remember how much a PlayStation costs at this point. So
500.
Okay. There we go. What a great segue. Because speaking of which, there's a report out in the wild that a PS5 Pro is not only an idea in Sony's head, but it's actually in development and it's going to come out at some point next year. That's what they're saying. Now, my immediate question to this was what the fuck are they going to do to make a PS5 more pro than a PS5 already is?
Ultra wide monitor support.
but here's the dirty trick, right? And so like, because they're like, oh, you know, they'll make, you know, like they'll be able to run 4K at 120 frames per second. And like my whole thing is like, it's great that the console will be capable of doing that. It still requires game makers to program the games to work in that manner. And the problem is that we are still seeing PS5 games that are coming out now where you still have to choose. Do you want performance mode or do you want resolution mode? And now some of those games, like they can still hit 60, even if you're playing in graphics mode, no problem. It might not be a stable 60. Like it might dip between like 60 and 50 kind of sort of thing, but we're still having to choose. So I don't feel like the game makers are at the point where they can do this consistently yet. Or I should say they're at the point they can do it. I don't think it's the hardware of the console that's the limiting factor behind this. And the thing that's rumored is that basically the big feature that is being talked about so far is that it might increase the ray tracing capabilities of the console. And I got to say, ray tracing is cool. Ray tracing is not going to get me to pop out another presumably $600 when I already have a PS5 that works perfectly well.
Yeah, man. Look, when playing Spider-Man, I like to stop and look at Spider-Man's reflection in a building every once in a while, but I don't really like to do that. I don't like it enough to turn off performance mode.
Yeah.
Right? Like I like swinging through the air at 60 frames and not, you know, half that, but like I get the look at, I get glare from a street light. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's not that big of a deal. Ray tracing. And I do lighting in my day job. So I actually like use programs. I can appreciate it is what I'm saying. But I don't need it.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm saying all this now, but like watch when it comes out, then I'll be like,
really? Cause like I was on board for the PS4 Pro because
I felt like it was the time, right? Like this seems
it was the time. Well, and that's the other thing, right? Is that we just got past, you know, a couple months ago, like the supply chain issues out there where you can just walk into a store and a PS5 is available to buy now. Like that just happened. I understand we're 2+ years into the console's life cycle. And by the time this system presumably will be coming out, we'd probably be close to 3.5 or 4 years into the life cycle, which is the same timetable that the PS4 Pro came out. But I do feel like that the PS4 Pro was a significant step up from the regular PS4, you know, like in terms of what it could do. Like the regular PS4 could not run games at 60 FPS reliably. The PS4 Pro could do that. You know what I mean? Like it had more storage. Like the original PS4 was pretty light on the storage and it had a bigger hard drive for those that didn't feel like installing one themselves inside of it. They'd have to make the value case. Now, some people who are smarter than me say that this actually could be just a really sly way for Sony to put a price increase into the market without increasing the price of the PS5 again, which they already did. Because, like, think about it. You put out a PS4 Pro or PS5 Pro at $600, you market it as, oh, here's these great features. And then you come out with, like, a PS5 Slim, which is, you know, just a regular PS5, no disc drive. And you put that out at, like, $400 or $350. And now, you know, now you can kind of see the difference between the two in a lot of ways. So maybe it's a way for them to do like a mid-cycle, you know, price up without actually, you know, doing it. Now, the PS4 Pro, when that came out at the same price as the PlayStation 4 did originally, if I recall correctly. No, did it? No, it was more expensive. I'm sorry. It was $350 and the PS4 came out at $299. So.
Well, here's the thing, man. And you mentioned a couple things. One, you mentioned that the timing lines up, and you mentioned, like, what are they going to do? That's my biggest issue, is don't do this because, like, you have a tradition of doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, do it because there's a good leap in advancement of technology. Not a giant step, but, like, you know, I want to be able to, it's got to be more than just like, hey, you don't have to choose between ray tracing and, mm-hmm. and performance. Like, it's got to be more than that.
Right.
At this point.
I would imagine like 8K support will probably be more robustly built in. I know the PS5 now can support 8K up to 30 FPS. Maybe like you can see like 8K 60 in a PS4 Pro model. I don't know. Like, I feel like I just get the sense that the stuff that they would add would be truly, I mean, it's ironic because then it's fucking named it for a reason, truly like pro level, like features that they would be adding to the console. But like, I would consider myself the target audience for such a thing. And like, I couldn't give a shit about 8K. I am not getting an 8K monitor anytime soon. like it is not something I am concerned about at this moment in time.
Yeah, I'm the same way, man. Yeah. My first 4K TV I got like a couple of months before the PS5 came out. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, yo, if you don't have a 4K TV and you're getting a PS5, what are you doing? Right? Like I get it. But I don't know. I'd have to see, and then I'd have to be really impressed, and then I don't know. My eldest son would have to be old enough to play video games, and then that would be an excuse for me to give him the old one and I take a new one. But even then, like, I can't just dump $600+ on something without a conversation happening. So no.
And without a rationale happening. That's the biggest. And you know, this is rumor. It's not even rumor, it's a report, but you know, they've got lots of time to market this, but I'm just very curious to see what they're going to market it as to make it that appealing to folks. The only other bit of notable news this week is that we are getting a new Persona 5 spinoff game. However, it is a real monkey's paw situation, because it's one of the things where like, oh, new Persona 5 game. Cool. Very good. Optimized for smartphone users, free to play with item-based in-app purchases.
Gross.
Coming out from Chinese developer Perfect World.
Gross. So. Yeah. And none of the characters that you love. It's just a brand spanking new game in this world with all the things that most modern gamers hate about gaming. With none of the characters that you like. Okay. I mean, this isn't for me. Yeah, it's not for me.
Look, if it's free to play, if it comes to the US, I will give it the old college try, as they say, but I'm not spending a dime on it.
And, yeah, no.
You know what I mean? And the moment it, like if it reveals itself to be mobile game bullshit, I'm out the door. I'm out the door. So
yeah,
even good mobile games can only hold my attention for so long. Hello, Marvel Snap, which I don't think I've played for like the last 2.5 months. I'm pretty sure.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
I play it. I play it at work when I'm supposed to be working. But that's about it. Mm. I don't play it. I don't play it too much. There's got to be like some really cool season pass to come before I, you know, jump into that. Mm-hmm. Let alone spend some money on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, a phone game. All right, a Persona 5 phone game. Great. Look, if you want to get a real Persona game, go to densepixels.com/Amazon. When you go to densepixels.com/Amazon, type in Persona. I'm not even going to type in Persona 5. I'm just going to type in Persona. You can get yourself, first thing that comes up, you can, I don't know if you can, I don't know if these affect us, but if it does, you can go to densepixels.com/Amazon, type in Persona, and get the 1967 unrated movie titled Persona with English subtitles for $14.99 to rent. For $14.99 to buy. I don't know what country this hails from.
I'm a little miffed that the Persona game franchise not the top Amazon result for
it's the search very, term
Persona, I gotta say.
It's very odd. It's the second one. Okay, it's the Persona 5 Royal Steelbook Edition for PlayStation 5. You can get that for $72.97. That's probably what you should buy. And while you're at it, pick yourself up some Persona 5 Royal Tarot cards, a complete 78 card deck plus extras, for $59.99. For the hardcore Persona 5 connoisseur, you can get all that at densepixels.com/Amazon.
Before we get to the post office, I talked last week how I learned about the Ease franchise for the first time in my life watching YouTube videos, because Persona 5, funnily enough, kind of reawakened a whole RPG, old school RPG. I'm not going to use the racist J term apparently at this point, but kind of awakened like an old school RPG, you know, dormancy within me. And so I'm checking out all the stuff, stumble, and I asked myself, like, what is the Ease franchise all about? Come to find out, it is not all what I thought it was. Like, I thought that series was a just traditional turn-based RPG, you know, originally of the 16-bit era. It's not, though. It's actually probably kind of the most in line with, like, the Mana series, if I had to, like, assign it to one specific series in terms of how it plays, where it is... is completely like action oriented. You know, the enemies are on the map in front of you. You have a small, you know, amount of attacks that you can do. And it looked pretty fun. Like it looked, you know, it's fast paced. So I gave Ys Origins a shot. And I've been playing quite a bit of it and been really enjoying myself a lot. When you first boot up the game, you can choose between two characters. One is a melee axe wielder. The other one is like a spellcaster. That operates from long range. I went with the melee character to start. And I've just been really having a good time hacking and slashing and blazing your way through this game. It's a very rudimentary RPG with a very anime story aesthetic to it. You can't, so basically, like, aside from your normal attacks that you have with your axe, you also get these weapons during the game, these items that give you elemental attacks that you can freely switch between. And kind of weaving those into your combat, creating different combos is sort of where the high level play comes in. Really enjoying the boss battles in this one as well. They get kind of bullet hellish in a lot of ways, especially as you get further on. I'm about halfway through the game at this point, and this one boss that I'm fighting right now is beating the shit out of me. And I'm trying to kind of formulate the best plan of attack to go in there and get it. But yeah, it's been really good so far, and good enough that I think when I'm done with this, because Origins is generally thought of to be one of kind of like the middle, like in terms of quality in the franchise, like middle upper of those games. Yeez 8 apparently is like the cream of the crop when it comes to the Yeez series. So I'm probably going to check that one out at some point. And, that, and the series, much like the Mana series, did make a pivot into like 3D action from the 2D. Like this has a very like, it's like an isometric view action game. Like Diablo is kind of sort of with the one that I'm playing right now, but the other ones have a bit more of a modern flair. I'm really enjoying it. Like I said, if you like the Mana games, this might be one to give a look-see to, because I think at least Origins you can find relatively cheap. And the game's kind of designed for you to play through it with both characters, because it unlocks a third character, and apparently that's how you get the true ending in the game. And from what I, you know, from what I can surmise, you can beat the game in about 10 to 12 hours per character. So they're not like super long. So, you know, it's cool. I'm pleasantly surprised at how fun this series that, again, I was always aware of, but had no fucking inkling as to what it was. And I'm having a good time playing it.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I didn't know how to pronounce it for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to pronounce it until I heard Morgan Webb pronounce it in an X-Play review. Mm. And she was like, it's East. And I'm like, all right, I guess. Like she has a degree in like rhetoric or some shit. So all right. The East it is.
So it is now time for the Dense Pixels post office. You can join our Discord at densepixels.com/fans to submit us questions, just like Johnny did asking you, Micah. So you really bought a double down for a Diablo 4.
No, Johnny, I'm 42 years old. If I eat a handheld chicken sandwich, I'm going to die.
I'm about to say, you're trying to minimize the risk of heart attack, not,
I can't eat like that anymore, man. Like I got a reason to live. I pre-ordered it. And, cause I had a feeling that I would like, Diablo, and I don't know how to control myself. So,
Cam asks, did anybody else almost tear up at the end of SmackDown this past week, or was it just him?
I didn't almost tear up, but it was hearing the crowd say "hug it out," and then they do it, and then they just erupted. It gave me a warm feeling. You know,
it's funny because I remember we were worried that they might have written themselves into a corner by kind of, I don't want to say jumping the gun, but putting the Sami Roman match out before WrestleMania, because you felt like that was the zenith of the story. And so where do you kind of go from here? And I think they did as good a job as they could have getting back around in a way that didn't feel forced, because like I said, you had the beginning segment where Cody tried to play mediator between Seth or between Kevin and Sammy, and Kevin's point, like Kevin brought up a shocking point. He's like, why, you're telling me like, you know, we don't have to be friends. We don't have to be brothers, but why would I fight along someone who doesn't want to be my friend? Only for Sammy to like catch him as he's leaving the arena to basically be like, look, like I know I said all this. He's like, I do love you. Like we're brothers. He's like, we always have been, we always will be, like, and I just want you to know that. And so for Kevin to drive away, and then, you know, at the end of the show when the Usos are beating him down, first of all, to give, you know, to not even pass over the amazing job, like, good on Jey Uso, because like I said, he is very much now like, well, he is very much back to being like the bad guy in the story, arguably the worst of the bad guys, because his betrayal of Sami Zayn was much more personal. But at the same time, like the points that he raised were like, you know what, I'm mad at him. but I get it. I understand it. But then, yeah, like you said, for Kevin to come out when he was getting the beat down and for them to embrace at the end and, you know, be arm in arm at the end of the show. It's going to be a banger for match. It's a fucking shame that reportedly that is not going to be the main event for night one. And I understand why it's not. Like, they want to give the ladies their flowers. They want Charlotte Flair, you know, to be out there in the main event against Rhea Ripley. And that totally makes sense to me. But I got to tell you, man, like this is especially given what the result is likely to be, like this is the match that you want at the end of man. The show.
Like if they want Charlotte to main event night one, like they better hurry up and do something to get people to care, man. Because
I think people will care, but I just don't think you're going to get the emotional.
That's what I'm saying.
Cathartic moment that you're going to get from Kevin and Sammy beating
the. Yeah. Like the reason I watch AEW, but the reason I prefer WWE is because like I don't really give a shit about the wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like like if I cared about like the in-ring work, I care about the in-ring work, but not over an entertaining story. Like I want to be entertained because this isn't sports. And I don't know, man. I need something to happen with I got no problem giving the ladies watching a main event, but I don't know, man. I need something to happen, and right now I'm only excited for it because I want Rhea Ripley to win. Mm-hmm. Also, like you mentioned, how people think this should have, you know, kind of ended at WrestleMania, right? Like the whole with Sammy and Roman like fighting for the title. Like I get it, but I actually kind of enjoy what they're doing now.
Well, you could argue that Sammy and the Usos was actually the real story the entire time, like because it was Jay that he was always fighting so hard to win over.
Yeah, and like Sammy, there's no way Sammy would have gotten that title. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way. Not at a WrestleMania. There's no way. Like, there's no. This is different from Daniel Bryan. And even if he did, I don't know, man. I'm getting like Graduate vibes from it. You know what I mean? Like the end of The Graduate, where it's just like, hey, me and this work girl, we gonna get married, and then they get on the bus, and then they're like, then they drive off to happily ever after. But then like, but what happens after happily ever mm-hmm. after? And it's just like, what happens after WrestleMania? So, I mean, you could still do that. You could still ask that question, but I don't know, man, this seems like a better fit. Like things feel like they're coming to a head from three different directions, right? You got the Canadians and Cody, you got the Bloodline, but then the Bloodline is kind of fractured at the moment. And like all three of those things converging mm-hmm. on WrestleMania. Like it's just, I don't know, man. It feels good. It feels right.
Well, while we're on the wrestling kick, EB Gamer says, does Roman defeat Cody at WrestleMania and make it to over 1,000 days as champion? He's currently 931. It'll be a while someone else can replicate a title reign and storyline like what's going on currently with the Bloodline. Yeah, I don't think you're going to see anything close to a title reign of this length for a very until the next generational guy comes along. Like it's like it would take that level of superstar to come along and do it. Now, here's the interesting thing. I would normally think that Cody would be a shoo-in to beat Roman at WrestleMania because of the story that's being told, like, finish the story and all that jazz. But EV Gamer makes the point that's been kind of stuck in the back of my mind for the last several months here, and that is you are so close to this, like, magic number. And I know that it's just a number, but you're so close to this like historic and no one thought it would ever happen kind of fucking thing that don't you just kind of want to like if you're WWE, like it plants the seed of doubt into the mind. And that's helpful to me because, again, otherwise I would be surefire Cody Rhodes going into WrestleMania, going to somehow make it happen. And he still might. But all I'm saying is that in back of my mind for all these near falls, I'm going to be like, man, Roman's so close to 1,000. Like, don't they just want to kind of get him there?
Do you think they make a big deal about him being so close to 1,000?
Well, they haven't yet. They haven't yet.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like if they do make a big deal about him being close to 1,000, like, what does that mean? Does it mean he's going to, does it mean like does it mean that WWE realizes it and wants you to realize it? Mm-hmm. And that is the reason why Roman has to fight, right? Like Roman is coming off like it's a foregone conclusion that I'm going to win, mm-hmm. right? Because that's what his character is supposed to think, right? His character is delusional. But the way the story is being told, it's being told like they're selling Finish the Story shirts, yeah. right? Like, so the wrestling fan expects this. But like you said, like EB Gamer said, like, does WWE know that we expect that? Right? Like,
I mean, like, look, I remember, what was it, 2 WrestleManias ago where, you know, it was the first show after COVID where they had a live audience, and the first match on the card was Drew versus Bobby Lashley for the title. And everyone's like, oh, they're dead. Like it was a surefire, bulletproof, no way, no chance that it's going to be any different, because they owed Drew that moment in front of a live crowd. Like, he got the title the previous year, but that was it. That was in the COVID WrestleMania. It wasn't the same. Like he needed that crowning moment in front of the live crowd. He's definitely going to win the match against Bobby Lashley. And what was the end result? Bobby Lashley held on to the title.
Right.
And I was as shocked as anybody that it happened. I couldn't believe it. So and that's the match that I think about when I think about Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns, with Cody getting this enormous push.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, we are set up for a rug pull. So
yeah, I wouldn't be shocked, and I wouldn't be upset by it either.
And you could argue that Roman winning and the Usos losing to Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn could continue to further, would actually be the best furtherance of the Bloodline story. Because then he's already been very tyrannical with his cousins. Like, he's telling Jay, like, go sort your brother out. Don't come back to me until you've taken care of this and all this other bullshit. And then, like, could you imagine, like, the night after WrestleMania, you know, he's sitting there like, I handled my business. And you guys couldn't handle it.
Yeah, you're right. It makes the, what happens after the story's over, mm-hmm. like, it makes more sense for it to happen that way. Whereas, you know, if Cody wins, you know, I like Cody, but I get tired of the melodramatics, you know, promos, and, you know,
I gotta say, I am a little shocked. I'm a little surprised at the level to which the crowd has embraced him. Like I was really worried that he would get like Batista'd at the Royal Rumble. And it has not been that way. Like the crowd is fully behind him, which I find very curious.
I mean, maybe people are buying that shit, right? Maybe people are buying, like, you know, him getting in the ring and delivering promos very passionately, but a little too passionately.
I don't know. Maybe it was the Hell in a Cell match that really cemented him.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe that's it. And maybe it's because we haven't seen him in a while because he was hurt. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think if Cody was just there every week doing this stuff, yeah, it for those, you know, 4 or 5 months he was gone, if he was actually there, I think doing the same stuff over, I think it would have kind of worn on people, because it's already worn on me. Mm-hmm. But it'll be interesting to see what the WrestleMania and Raw after WrestleMania crowd, how they take Cody. That's what I'm curious about. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get anybody from bumfuck nowhere to cheer for a white blonde man in a suit, right? Like, that's easy. We need the cynics. We need all the AEW fans who swear they stopped watching WWE, but are buying tickets to WrestleMania. We need them We need to hear their opinion on Cody.
Film Wanderer says, I gave Dead Cells a go over the weekend and instantly recoiled when I was about to die because of permadeath. I played it because of Game Pass, yet I almost bought something that might be too punishing. What's a game that felt so dire due to difficulty that you regret purchasing?
I don't know, man, because I'm not afraid to throw a game on easy. I'm at this point, man. I don't have like strong reflexes and stuff like that, so that's why I suck at fighting games.
I got suckered into buying Frostpunk when it was on sale, only to remind myself that I really don't like city management games, and Frostpunk's a particularly brutal one to boot. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I have one.
That's the only one I can think of, because again, I usually don't buy much on impulse. But push through Dead Cells. Dead Cells, it is hard at first, but it gets you'd be surprised how good you get so quickly in that game once you just learn the enemies and learn the learn the patterns and get a good roll on a run. So T-Wash says, what type of DLC is a must for you? Mine is what if DLC, like the one The Force Unleashed had, where you take on all the movie heroes.
Most of the DLC that I buy is like character based, mm-hmm. right? Like I really liked Asura's Wrath, and I bought the DLC. I mean, you had to buy the DLC if you wanted the actual ending, which was fucked up. But they also had DLC where you got to fight Ryu, and then you got to fight I think Demon Akuma on the moon, mm-hmm. or some shit like that. That was super fun, man. And the only other, and you know, unless it's a game that like Spider-Man, you know, that I just absolutely love. And I bought the story DLC for that because I wanted to play it. I don't necessarily have a type, mm-hmm. right? As much as I like Midnight Suns, the actual like playing of Midnight Suns, I don't need the story DLC because like the story is not the best part of that game. But yeah, it just depends on if I like the actual game, mm-hmm. And just want more of it.
I prefer DLCs that offer new mechanics to the gameplay. And cause that's kind of what like board games do with expansions. So like I buy board game expansions for like the games that I really like a lot, just because they usually add complexity through additional like mechanical layers to the gameplay, which forces you to change your strategy and things like that. And I kind of like that when games do the same. A good example for this, Children of Morta had a couple character DLC packs, but they also had the Paws and Claws DLC, which basically lets you have pets that would accompany you on the game. And all they did was kind of just give you passive stat boosts, but they gave you other items to collect and stuff like that as you went through the different dungeons and things of that nature to kind of make those stats. And you could turn them on and off on demand because they were resource driven. So like you could go farm for a little bit, and then when you were going on like a big run to like really like, you know, take down a boss character, you could equip all of your, you know, all your big stats so that you were, you know, maxed out to go in there with a little bit of extra move. Children of Morta, a really good game, by the way. I did end up beating it, and it was pretty phenomenal. So
cool.
Yeah. Muckmeister says, Brad, have you checked out the Demon Souls remaster for PS5? I played it after bouncing off of two other Dark Souls games, but eventually being won over by Elden Ring. It's amazingly well done, not insanely difficult, and beatable in like 30 hours. I have not checked this out yet, only because I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, within the next 12 months, that game is going to be free on PlayStation Plus at some point. And so I will download it. I will download it when it's free. Even though it's been on like super sale quite a few times since then, I know it's going to be free, and I know that the minute I purchase it, it'll be free like the next month. So like I'm at this point where I'm just kind of waiting. Plus, I still have Bloodborne that I want to get to. first anyway. They also ask, has a single game entry from a franchise enticed you to explore other games from that franchise or from the developer? If so, with what game? For example, the resurfacing of old FromSoft content after Elden Ring, Persona 5, etc.
The only thing I can think of off the top of my head is the Yakuza games, mm-hmm. the Like a Dragon games. I played the original Yakuza that was English dubbed, which is weird because they had like a bunch of American like actors like Michael Madsen and stuff like that in the original PS2 version. And I didn't really give it a shot. Like I liked it, but I didn't really get far in it. And then I bought Yakuza Zero, mm-hmm. which I forget when it released, but chronologically it's a prequel to all of them. And I fell in love with the game and was like, oh, well, this is just amazing. And then I ended up buying all of them. every other game that I have that's a franchise, I think I was in from the ground floor, right? Mm-hmm. Like Assassin's Creed, I got from the ground floor. What I'm saying is I don't think anything made me go backward. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I do this all the time, especially with indie developers. Typically if a developer makes a really good game, that quality persists across their entire catalog. So like a good example of this is after I played Grifflands, which is a fucking excellent card-based deck builder roguelike game. I went back to play Don't Starve because Clay made both games. And I was like, well, Grifflands is so good. Maybe we'll check out Don't Starve. Found out that Don't Starve, not for me. But I probably would not have gone back and played Don't Starve if not for having played Grifflands and really finding it phenomenal. The Souls example works for me too. I just talked about the Yee series. I'm going to check out the other games in the series now that I've played Origin because the Falcom games seem pretty cool. I also have like on the periphery, like the Trails series now because that's, they also developed those games. Those are also very different. Yeah, man. Like I trust me, if there's a game that comes out from a developer, and it hits well, I will be very inclined to go back and check out their back catalog or to look forward to future releases coming from that developer too. So,
oh, you know what I did? I liked Midnight Suns. I went and I played a little bit of XCOM too. Mm-hmm. And I like it. I think I like XCOM a little more. There's a little more going on, mm-hmm. And there's a little more to manage. But yeah, there's another example of a more recent example.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my answer, and I'm sticking to it.
Finally, Anthony says, what are your feelings on New Game Plus? Do you like it? Is it a cheap way to extend the lifespan of a game and get replays and more hours of gameplay without actual DLC?
I like New Game Plus, especially if like it's an actual New Game Plus and not like, you know, hey, here's some inventory stuff that you had. Like I think it's a perfect excuse to go back and play a game you liked. Mm-hmm. You don't have to play it immediately, right? Like when I replayed God of War 2018, I did New Game Plus and it was fun. It was just fun all over again. And I didn't have to worry about like finding every little thing and going off the beaten path and doing certain side quests and stuff. I just wanted to plow through the story just to kind of get myself back in that world. I think New Game Plus is great if it's done right. You know,
see, I find it to be mostly kind of useless. Unless there's a mechanic implemented that makes it interesting. So probably the most famous example is the Chrono Trigger game, where the New Game Plus was kind of essential because there was a lot of different endings that the game could give you. And the only way to experience those endings was to play it on New Game Plus, because you could only trigger the endings based on when you beat the final boss. And when you played on New Game Plus, you could go tackle the final boss, like literally from the beginning hours of the game if you wanted to. So like it was one of those things where they kind of did it. I know Nier Automata is probably like the modern day example of that, where the game is really intended to be played several times in succession under New Game Plus parameters, because there's different endings and stuff that come with that too. I think if the game just drops you back into the world with all your stuff without really a reason to play it again, that's just kind of, I guess it's cool, like when you're, if you're coming back to revisit a game, so you don't have to start from
square one. That's what I'm talking about. Like I don't like beat a game and then immediately turn around and play it again in New Game Plus. I don't do that. I need room to breathe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but isn't the progression and the growth like one of the appealing parts of playing the game, like getting stronger as the game goes along? Like, do you really want all your toys from Jump Street?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I only do it if I just want to kind of fuck around. Like if there's a story that I really want to play, then I'll do it. Or if there's a New Game Plus, like Spider-Man, I play that game. I must have finished that game at least 5 times. And the first time, and I do it the same way every time. I play on normal, then you get New Game Plus, and I bump up the difficulty. So I'm still getting the progression. I'm still getting it. Now, part of it is incremental, but it kind of levels the playing field a bit. Because if you don't have all your toys and you're just jumping into the hardest difficulty level, like, it's cheap. Right, because most difficulty levels, they don't reprogram the enemies; they just make you weaker and them stronger. So that's what I'm talking about. Like, I don't.
Funnily enough, the most fun I've had with a New Game Plus mode, what it wasn't even technically a New Game Plus mode. So I remember when I first had when I rented Metal Gear Solid from Blockbuster back in the day. I beat it 3 times while I had it, because I beat it the first time through and got the bandana. And then the second time through, I played with infinite ammo. So I was just playing serial killer Solid Snake and just mowing everybody down. And then I got the stealth suit, and the stealth suit is just fun, a fun way to fuck around in that game. Cause it is really fun to be invisible and walk up and punch a guard in the face and then look at them, could be confused to figure out like what's going on. So even though that is technically not a New Game Plus official mode, it kind of is. And like I said, it changes the game so dramatically that it makes it fun to play on the subsequent playthroughs. So
I gotcha.
Yeah. So that's it for the post office. Thank you guys for submitting your questions. Again, you can join our Discord by going to densepixels.com/fans and submitting your questions that we will answer on the air. Make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you download fine podcasts. Go to youtube.com/densepixels to subscribe on there as well. You can follow us on Twitch. I'm densepixels Brad. Terrence is apparition 410. Carrie is up. It's Carrie. No show next week. I am out of town, unfortunately. So we will see you all in 2 weeks, where I'm sure I will have Diablo 4 beta impressions and Lord only knows what else between now and then. I was suckered in by a quiet week of video game news, so I'm sure all hell will break loose over the next 2 weeks until we talk to you next time. But thank you guys very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you all the next time.
See ya.